to me, the really important thing about getting an advisor to understand a particular farm, the particular habitats he's got, or he or she has got, and all the prescriptions that could be applied to help improve the habitats on those on that farm. The important thing is that you are out there on the farm a lot and you engage with the farmer a lot, get to know the farmer very, very well, and can influence their decisions. You know, not just tell them what to do, but just gently influence them by educating them on the best way of changing the way they manage the land, you know, in response to, you know, the payment that they're getting to do that. But so it frustrated me when you're supposed to sort of do a pick and mix from prescriptions that are already written in the computer system, and it's expected that the farmer can understand that and run with it, which...
And of course it's a one size fits all.
It is, yeah. I mean, I was lucky that when I was there, I knew some of the people in the national team from my previous work in the national land management team. And I used to think, well, if I'm confused about this and I'm not sure about what I'm getting as advice from local colleagues who were really good, but they were having to just do what they were told, I thought, well, I'll phone the national specialist. I had no hesitation doing that, perhaps because I was a bit older than a lot of the others. I just phoned the national specialist. And they'd say, oh, well, you can tailor these things, you know. So I would alter them a bit. And I'd chat it through with local people. And so there were some good specialists from the former English Nature in particular. And they'd often say, yeah, that's fine, but you weren't really meant to do that. You weren't really meant to alter the prescriptions that the system generated. But you could do it. But I think you risked being hauled over the coals for it. And I believe that since I've left Natural England, nobody's allowed to change the prescriptions now. You have to use the drop-down ones and that's it. But it's a way of standardising things, and I think the standardisation is imposed upon the DEFRA and in turn Natural England from Europe. And I understood from other advisers that when they used to deliver countryside stewardship before they had to use Genesis, which was the HLS tool, they were able to, you know, work up to 20 plus agreements in a year, whereas with Genesis, the figure which was regarded as the norm or the target was 8 agreements per year, which is, to me, incredibly inefficient. You know,
well, somebody told me when the schemes took over from the ESA schemes, some of them could be 80%, taking 80% of the funding and administration.
I think that's probably true. A catchment-sensitive farming officer, very strong advocate of the way CSF, catchment-sensitive farming, spent its money, because he said it was like 60% efficient. 60% of the money went to funding works which had a benefit, where in contrast, he'd contrast it to HLS, and I think he was saying that HLS is like 80% inefficient, so only 20%
funding actually goes to
paying for benefits to be, you know, created.
I suppose, yeah, most people don't realise when they see these massive amounts of money going in farm support, they'd be horrified if they thought 80% of it was going in administration.
That's right, yeah.
And only 20% to the farmer.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you can see why that is, because there's rather a few coalface advisors, you know. There's very few advisors actually doing the working up the agreements. There's an awful lot of other people, backroom staff or whatever the word is, supporting the scheme and that sort of thing. And incredibly expensive computing consultants, you know, supplying the software and everything, it's not good for the well-being of the people doing it.
No. So how long ago is it that you've been left Natural England?
I was allowed to have voluntary early redundancy or retirement actually in 2011.
Were they cutting staff?
Oh yeah, they were looking initially to get rid of 400 staff. I think they got rid of 400 in that round, and I was one of the lucky 300 that was let go. And actually before I'd even left, I'd been sort of headhunted by Trent Rivers Trust to take up a part-time role at Titusworth near Leek as the Titusworth catchment officer. And the objective of that role was working closely with farmers to help them not pollute the reservoir with pesticides and indeed other, you know, organic pollutants like slurry.
This is in the Staffordshire Moors.
It is, yeah.
Which is part of the South West Peak.
Yeah.
So during your job, as that catchment sensitive officer, what are your observations of farming in the Staffordshire, farming and farmers in the Staffordshire Moorlands?
Well, the farmers that I work with are principally pretty intensive dairy farmers, and they are trying to squeeze productivity out of every square metre of their farm. There's very few areas that they feel that they can allow to be valuable habitat. But having said that, there are a handful that have got high-level stewardship agreements. Some of those handful are actually intensive dairy farmers, and they have got, you know, land management options to benefit of, you know, snipe and curlew and various, you know, remnants perhaps of heathland and stuff like that. And there's also one or two that have got very, very high quality HLSs, but they would tend to be beef and sheep rather than dairy.
In the South West Peak project, they say landscape at a crossroads. I mean, are you, if things carry on as they are you worried for the future about what's happening to land in this area? And what do you think would improve matters?
Well, I would say that in terms of loss of the losses of land have already occurred pretty much. The losses from habitat to improved meadow, you know, silage ground, that's already happened. In terms of damage to existing land, I would say that most of the switched on farmers aren't really damaging their land. They're understanding that structure, good structure, is important. They're understanding that it's sensible not to traffic on land when it's soaking wet. They're understanding that, you know, timing of slurry applications and everything is important. That doesn't mean to say that there aren't times when rules go out the window, like, for example, during 2012, which was wetter during the summer than the typical winter. Tremendous damage was caused to soils that summer. But most of the farms have healed pretty well since. And, you know, I've been out walking fields today all day for water sampling, and fields are incredibly wet, but there's no cows out, or hardly any cows out, and I've not come across any, you know, deep ruts from any inappropriate tankering or anything. So most people do understand things pretty well, and they're not damaging their land. If they feel that it is somewhat damaged, they're making efforts to change their systems, you know, invest in lower ground pressure tyres, invest in umbilical systems, which, you know, there's pros and cons of umbilical systems. But people are mindful of the need to not damage their soils.
What about the smaller farms that have been on these stewardship schemes, the ESA and countryside stewardships, for like 20 to 30 years? And because the new schemes are very complicated, they're not going to take them all. Are we going to see even greater loss of what few flower meadows and species-rich pastures that are left?
It depends very much on the mindset of the current owner and whether they've got many years ahead of them. But, you know, there will be some who so strongly believe in their heart that it's right to manage the land correctly. It might not make any difference unless, of course, they just can't afford to carry on managing it the right way.
Especially at the moment where everything, yeah, almost every commodity is under price pressure.
That's right, yeah. So it's very worrying, actually, because if there's no environmental stewardship money coming in, some people may not be able to afford to manage the land in a environmentally sensitive way, and they could end up sort of renting it out to intensive dairy men who will just take two cuts of silage on it and tanker, you know, many thousands of gallons per hectare of slurry onto it. And that would be a tragedy, really, after so much has been invested into improving the habitat for flora and fauna. That would be very sad.
Do you think anybody's bothered? Government policy?
I don't know, really. Listening to national government people, it would appear not. Listening to my former colleagues in Natural England, they're very, very bothered.
They're still in Natural England.
Still in Natural England. Some of them are very bothered indeed. And there's almost even a thought, is there some sort of conspiracy to make the new schemes completely unworkable? And that, I think, is an absolute tragedy.
But even people in Natural England are so worried that they're thinking, what's going on?
I think that there's definitely a lot of worry. I've not spoken, you know, widely to people in Natural England, but one or two, that's the feeling that I get.
As you travel around in the Staffordshire Moorlands, what do you see about potential young farmers taking on the farms?
Well, I can only speak for probably three farms where I know there's youngsters who are likely successors. They're obviously now really knuckling down to working as a key contributor on the farm. perhaps more than three actually, but they're knuckling down to being key contributors on farms, but they're not yet lined up to be successors necessarily.
That's Do you think they'll want to be? You know, how many young people want to carry it on?
Some probably are still keen now. How long that will last, if the dairy business doesn't start picking up very, very quickly, that would be just a totally unsustainable aspiration, so it just won't happen. Right, I just need to mention a few other things that I do in my self-employed status. Right from the very first year of being self-employed, I was asked by Natural England actually to tender for some meadow enhancement work on HLS agreements which have got land in usually option HK7, which is restoration of species-rich grassland. It's actually using a plot-based methodology rather than whole field, whereby you introduce seed into three plots per hectare, and a plot is typically 1 metre by 4 metres. I think to their credit, Natural England are including this as a supplement option to the HK7, and they will pay the farmer for the cost of doing this, and they're also insisting on the seed being of local provenance, so it's actually got to be collected from not only the county where it's going to be planted, but from the area within the county. So the South West Peak sites have to have seed collected from the South West Peak. In the first year I didn't win the main tender, but I got contracted back by the person that won it to do delivery of over 100 plots. And every year since, I've actually picked up all the work because it's been much smaller chunks of work. And it's always been in the South West Peak. So I've managed to economise on travelling and collect seed from various donor site locations on my way back from Leek Market each Tuesday during July, August, September, or July and August and into the beginning of September. And that's formed the basis of my seed stock for the plot work. And I've done up to about 100 plots per year each year since 2011. I've not actually had a chance to go and look specifically at my plots, but if they're being managed well, late season aftermath grazing and a hay cut at the right time, according to their prescription, which will be after mid-July, they're almost certain to be successful, because I've set up some plots myself at home and they are very successful.
So far you haven't had time to see how all this works?
I haven't on the HLS sites, but I've trialled it at home and in a local nature reserve, and it's worked very, very well.
So even more so, what a tragedy to be after all this work if these schemes were to fold.
It would be very sad, yes. Unless, of course, their fields have always been hay meadows and they'll carry on being hay meadows.
Yeah, but will they?
Well, they might not. You know, if the money's not there, I mean, the likelihood of uptake of the new schemes which will replace, for example, upland entry-level stewardship, the likelihood of uptake in the upland is negligible, because there's no money in it for the farmer. They can't entertain it.
The bureaucracy is too great as well.
I mean, I don't understand the scheme in detail at all, but from what people have told me, there's a lot of obligations put on the farmer and very little in terms of income back for it. And they just would not be able to entertain it.
No.
It's a non-starter. And that's just so sad. Whereas UELS was relatively cheap, and in, you know, some of the options were, you know, beneficial.
You know, it's just so sad, because they are virtually our rainforests, aren't they? We've so few left, and, you know, we're losing them.
Well, grassland is our rainforest, is, I think, probably what you're meaning, isn't it?
Mm. As a species rich.
Oh, right, in terms of species, right. Mm. So they're our pool of... Yes, they are, definitely. Yeah.
For our pollinators and everything.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that is true. I mean, interestingly, in the lowlands, in the arable lowlands, the uptake of these field margins is massive. An awful lot of people have taken up these pollen and nectar mixes on headlands.
But even they're not talking of taking the new schemes up, are
they? Well, if they're not doing that, that's just an incredibly huge loss, because they're good for bees and butterflies and birds, you know, massively good. Mm. And farmers really buy into it. Another thing I've taken to doing since I left Natural England is hedge laying if I can get the work and if I get the opportunity to deliver it during the winter month. Most of the hedge laying that I've done has actually been on hedgerows which have got the hedge laying restoration option under HLS. Without that, farmers can't afford to pay someone to do it. I've done a lot in the White Peak area, one quite long hedge in Staffordshire Moorlands, as well. But, you know, I'm a great believer that hedge laying is a fantastic thing to do. You know, really rejuvenates the hedge with lots of new growth from the bottom, and you know, really thickens it up. And you gap it up as well. You know, put new plants in as well.
Does that support a wider range of wildlife?
Well, it does really. I mean, a really old leggy hedge is very open in the bottom. It's not a lot of use for birds to nest in, because you know, if sheep and that can go underneath it and shake it about, birds won't contemplate setting, you know, building a nest there. Whereas if it's really thick in the bottom, and often these restoration comes with fencing both sides as well, so it can become very, very dense in the bottom and really good for not just bird nesting, but for, you know, lots of invertebrates and small mammals and all sorts. So it's a good thing.